Hello, my name is Graham. I typically am the Warhammer 40k guy on these podcasts on the tabletop battlefield. And you might know me from certain forums such as Librarium Online as the under the screen name of Paladin 777.
And I'm Dave with MechSiege.com.
And of course, I'm Jason, the creator of the Army Showcase, and today we ask an interesting question. Can miniature wargaming go mainstream? So we're going to discuss that topic in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 2 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And in just a moment, we'll get to our main topic here. But for the first time in this show, we actually have Dave from MechSiege, the new project that we kind of, well, he'll tell you a little bit more about it. I talked a little bit about it last time as he pulled a little bit of joke on us with that West Michigan Independent Mech Project thing, apparently. But he maybe has more comments on that. So let's have Dave just do a little introduction to himself, and then we'll get to our main topic.
Okay, my name is Dave Russell from West Michigan. Avid wargamer and role-playing gamer. Been working with playing Mech Warrior for since it was BattleTech in the old days. When the Mech Warrior Clicks came along, originally was okay with it. Didn't really do well in the area, so I ended up getting out of it. And once Age of Destruction came in, fell in love with it. Started getting into it again, and now of course we're kind of in a state of mass confusion and whatnot with everything's either gonna go or not gonna go. So I decided to do something about it and create a project in which give the players an ability to continue on with what parts of the MechWarrior tournaments and games that they were used to having and had all the good results with, even though WizKids probably are going to be having anything to do with the franchise for quite some time. And now I'm here.
Thanks for the introduction, Dave. So, I mean, probably in a future episode, once again, MechSiege up and run a bit more, probably have you back on to give some more details about it. But today we're talking about, can miniature wargaming ever actually kind of go mainstream? And the reason we bring this up is partially partially into what Dave is talking about here, about the fact that just the past couple of months, WizKids kind of axed their prize support for MechWarrior. And, you know, one of the things they've tossed around was the idea of bringing the game back is this big media deal. And that they want to obviously, well, they never said exactly what they want to do, but, you know, obviously people are always tossed around the idea of a MechWarrior movie. Are you familiar with the MechWarrior universe at all, Graham?
Limited amounts. I played MechWarrior 2, actually. I created a character from BattleTech ages past, back when I was in high school, so that was a while ago.
Hey, Dave, how long have you been playing BattleTech for, out of curiosity? Dave, you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, how long have you been playing BattleTech for?
I played BattleTech, let's see, since, I'd say sophomore, so, I played it from 88 until about, 94.
Okay.
So that was it. See, the thing with BattleTech was that there was like a one buddy of mine in the area that actually owned all the books and actually knew all the rules by heart. And it was one of those things where we all kind of went to him and played with him, but none of us ever like could find any of the books or anything ourselves. And so we just kind of, it was depending on whether he was available if we were playing or not. And after a while, he moved off to college, so we just kind of grew out of it for a while. But even though it was such a cool universe and stuff, looked to and just never got to it until, you know, later on. But by that time, you know, the whole FASTA started going under and all that other stuff was happening with Harmony Gold. And so the game really wasn't popular at the time until WizKids, you know, took over and started doing the MechWarrior clicks.
Now, the one thing I want to get your opinion on, and we talked with Owen. You know Owen, right? The Battlemaster over here? It was on the show
yes.
A couple episodes ago. Yeah. Talked to him a little bit, I guess. That's what he told me anyway. So what's your idea about of a MechWarrior movie? Do you think it's actually feasible? How would you like to see it done?
You know, it's a real tough package to sell because of the fact, like a lot of people say, You know, it's one of those things where even Transformers, I mean, it'd be really cool and honorable just to be able to say I have a movie based on this product and this storyline in this universe that I like. The problem is, no matter what, you have to understand that not everybody's expectations are going to be met. It's either going to be really awesome for the story and not as cool for the action, and then the gung-ho, I want to see mechs blow up people are going to be disappointed. Yeah. Or it's going to be the opposite, and then the people are going to be like, well, I liked all the mechs, but that wasn't enough. I wanted to see story. And then you got people that are like, well, they're going to pick it apart just because the storyline might not fit with whatever fiction's already out there. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be somebody picking something apart. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, a good example, a really good example of this would be, like, the Dungeons & Dragons movie. Like, they came out with a Dungeons & Dragons movie back in 2000.
Yeah, I remember that.
I saw that recently, actually. I own it.
Before it came out, I mean, it was such a big hype. Everyone's going to say, yeah, this is a Dungeons & Dragons movie. It's going to be cool. It finally came out, and people were trashing it, not because of whether it was a good movie or not, but just because of the fact that they didn't agree with how the game was portrayed in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid that if they do a movie, that you're going to have the same kind of results. You're going to have people that never even heard of BattleTech that are going to start loving it and getting into it again. But the people that are gung-ho into the BattleTech universe are going to be picking it apart. And they're going to say, you know, hey, I like this and like this, but I hate this and hate this. And it's all the people that are saying, I hate this and I hate this, that's going to end up making it not really favorable for the players. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be something everyone's going to have their own opinion on. But, you know, I do think it's a good method to get the whole story and the universe out there past the video games and into a new potential customer base to get them into the game.
Yeah, because with Graham here, you know, he's a big 40K guy. I mean, it would be the same problem with 40K because it's got such a rich history. And like, GW's never tried to do anything.
I don't even know if it's feasible to do a movie on that. You can't. You might be able to have like a TV show, and even then you still probably could encompass everything because there's some 10 races, and each one of them is... You can make a movie on each one of them and still not have enough. And you'd still have people complaining that there wasn't enough history in it.
Kind of like along what Dave was saying, how do you create a movie, like, you know, that just pick any kind of event from any, you know, whether it be Warhammer 40,000, BattleTech, Star Wars, Star Trek, any kind of huge universe, and how do you, like, make it true to the fiction to the point where the hardcore fans love it, but also it's not, like, mind-boggling the people who just know nothing about the universe.
And the only way I could see it is if maybe you took a certain event, for example, the Horus Heresy from 40K, you could make a movie out of that, and that you could do pretty well. But that's still one story out of untold, probably a couple hundred. I mean, you've got characters everywhere in every different race doing every which different thing. You've got Orcs, Eldar, Dark Eldar, Chaos Marines, everything. Everything from demons to saints.
Great, exactly.
Like saints, but...
And a good another thing too to point out is that, you know, you mentioned Star Wars and Star Trek. Well, if you go back and see how those have branched off from movies into the vast universe they are, when they first came out, it was just a story of a big event, just like he was saying, a big event, and it was all these other people that said, hey, you know, I liked the Mandalorians, so I'm going to do research on them, and then books came out with them, and then, you know, it expanded from there. Whereas if a movie was to happen because of all the backstories been made, you know, you're always going to find someone that's not pleased. And that's the problem with making some kind of a motion picture or big media event that affects something that's such a wide scale, like any of these games. So if you do it, you have to find something that involves everything. Like, I'm not, you know, familiar with the 40K stuff, but for BattleTech, it would have to be, you know, I would say it would have to be like the Clan Invasion, the biggest thing. And if that's successful, then the next one would be the Jihad. You know, all these things that affect everybody, so that way you have a vast interpretation from all the different factions, all the different groups, and everybody has, you know, some kind, something involved, so people can understand the whole universe as whole, rather than say, okay, this story is about Adam Steiner, and it's all about, you know, so all the Steiner people will be happy, but anyone else, you know, won't
be a little bit peeved, I guess.
It's kind of convenient you mentioned Adam Steiner. Did you ever watch the old cartoon show from like the mid-90s?
I've seen
it. Yes, I loved it.
Yeah, because that's actually how I got into Battletech. I saw that on television. I went and bought the giant action figures I had. And then like a year or so later, I'm like, oh, this is based on, or no, that got the MechWarrior computer games. And I eventually found out about the board game at the time, which was third edition Battletech, and I got that. But you know, that's the other thing. If you watch a cartoon show now, I actually go back and watch them every now and then, even though you legally can't, but you can find them on the internet. You know, it's so goofy compared, it's so ridiculously inaccurate to the Battletech universe, but the fact is, since that's like what I originally knew, I still love watching it. It's so much fun to watch. But
yeah.
But anyway, let's jump forward here, and let's say, obviously, it's theoretically possible to make an awesome MechWarrior movie. It's such an in-depth universe, there's no reason you can't make a fantastic movie out of it. Let's say WizKids makes this movie. It's an absolutely amazing, truly awesome movie. Will this actually drive players to the MechWarrior game? Does anyone actually think it will?
It's possible. I'm not saying it will, but it is possible.
Some will probably check it out.
Right.
Would you expect to see mass adoption from a movie to drive them to the tabletop game?
I'm going to have to say no, because there's a lot of people who just don't see these games as... They see these games as something, like, maybe even childish. Like,
yeah,
they're not, but a lot of people, that's the way a lot of people see them. They're, like, nerdy. I mean, I'm not going to say they're... Be completely off and say that they're not in and of themselves. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of nerdiness in it, but that's okay. That makes what we are. I think one of the greatest examples of possibly, or one of the greatest ways that I've seen a game franchise put out a game, it would have to be Dawn of War from Warhammer 40K.
The computer game.
Mm-hmm. It was very well done. It actually was very innovative as far as, it was a real-time strategy game if you're not familiar with it. And it actually very well emulated the tabletop on the computer screen. I mean, it brought elements from 40K to the real-time strategy universe.
Mm-hmm. I love the librarian's quote that I had in that game. What about your thoughts, Dave? You think like a movie would drive people to play the tabletop game?
I think that it would, and here's how, but I don't think it would work the way that people would expect it to work. What would happen is it would give the companies the motivation to actually make new product and actually put more product out there. That's not going to per se. I mean, yeah, you're going to have some trickle in from the movie. Some people, you know, little kids or whatever that like the idea and then want to give it a shot and see what it's all about. But the main thing is it's going to stimulate the players that have been playing for so long and dedicated that maybe haven't been playing as much lately. And all of a sudden it's going to breathe new life into the game that it's already there. I mean, there's so many players now, they just don't play anymore because of all the stuff that's going on with WizKids. Maybe they just, you know, got a different job. Maybe they don't have any, they can't find anybody to play with, any friends in the area. They've just moved. But when a movie like this comes out, it brings all that stuff up to the surface. So then you're going to start seeing posters in stores saying new, you know, this, and then you're going to be in a store buying some of the new stuff, and behind you is going to be a guy in line that's going to happen. He's going to say, hey, my name's Bob. I live two blocks down, and I play. I haven't played this yet. Have you played it? And you could say, yeah, I played it back in the old days when it was out, so maybe we should get together and play sometime. Then you get more people playing again. When you get more people playing again, you get more people buying stuff, and it's going to be profitable for them. I don't think it's going to work as in what everyone expects it to. Like, everyone that goes to see the movie is going to leave with, like, zombie eyes going, must go to game store, must buy product. It's not going to work like that.
One of the greatest analogies I've ever heard.
You know, but I think it will work to some degree. I think it'll work enough to keep the product going. I think it'll work in that sense, but, not to what some people think.
Let's talk about maybe trying to make the game appeal to a large fan base. I mean, MechWarrior is a relatively simple game, especially when compared to something like Warhammer 40K, which we got the rule book here that Graham's looking through. But
it's monstrous. I mean, it's an encyclopedia.
It's 300 pages, I think.
Wouldn't surprise me.
That's volume one.
The whole book is 300 pages. It's about 100 pages of rules, 200 pages of like fiction, beautiful photographs and things. But MechWarrior is not even anywhere that complicated, but do you think, is MechWarrior even really too complex for your average game player that just really wants to sit down for half an hour and play some crazy little game and move on?
Right.
What's your thoughts, Dave, before I chime in and keep talking some more?
I would say that, I've played Classic BattleTech now a few times, and I think that with all this, with the MechWarrior pieces and the fact that they're coming out now with conversions for being able to play the Classic BattleTech using the MechWarrior figures, and a lot of the original, negatives about doing that was the fact that, oh, Classic BattleTech is too complicated, it takes too long to play. But the simple fact is the more you play it, the more you understand the rules, and the faster you're able to take your turns. And once you get everyone playing it for, a few game sessions, and once you get it down packed, it really can go as fast as a full, MechWarrior game session. Now, you won't get as many games per se, but you still have a good time, and you still do it within the amount of time that you were playing, like, say, a tournament for MechWarrior. Can take about 4 hours because you play three or four games.
Yeah.
In that time. So the difference isn't the fact that, you play so many times, you still, take up 4 to 5 hours, but instead of doing that, you're playing, maybe one big scenario. But the cool thing is, too, is that by doing with the Classic BattleTech, you could play against a whole bunch of other players. It could be everyone playing. So instead of having to watch your back, against one person, now you gotta watch, your back and your sides and your fronts and your, all over the place. So I think that, once people start to give it a try and learn these, these other rules and realize that they're not as complicated as what, after you get used to them. Cause it's, I've seen some games out there where, you have to keep like 3-4, like pages of information for each unit that you have rather than,
with
the Classic BattleTech, you have one. And now they're coming out with things where you can print off all the information on index card size things, so you can have an index card with all the information on it that you need. So your four units that you use or five units, whatever, for that Classic BattleTech event is you're still only taking up as much space as one piece of paper would on a normal game. And it's simple too. The other thing I like about Classic BattleTech and MechWarrior is that, you only use one type of dice, and it's a standard six-sided dice. Anyone can find them anywhere. With the other RPGs and other things, I get special dice. Now, I don't know anything about 40K, but I do remember seeing a guy having like a pail full of dice, and half of them had all these weird symbols on them. Something like that, I don't think I'd have a hard time getting into because of that.
There's actually only one dice that's a little weird, and that's a scatter dice. Other than that, all the dice are just six-siders.
Okay.
So
it's about 40K rules change every couple of years, so it's possible some other editions. I've seen some of the.
I still don't think so because I've been playing since second edition.
Oh, okay, I've been playing since about fourth. So I've seen some of the second edition cards. They have actually cards in the codexes, but like we were saying about one thing, I think a lot of game companies tend to kind of fail at is they don't provide adequate training material in terms of actually getting players into the game. It's like. Like 40K or 40K in Fantasy and Lord of the Rings, Games Workshop has these really nice starter sets. They run over $60 and they have, a bunch of figures in them, and they have these step-by-step rule books, where the first scenario, they introduce movement, then introduce movement and range combat, then movement and close combat. So it adds you into the game. Like, WizKids doesn't seem to do any of that for their games. I know Privateer Press's War Machine, back when we reviewed that game, that was one frustration we had. There's no real way to easily learn that game, like these train scenarios. So you think maybe that would be a nice thing to have to add to starter sets where it's literally you basically play games, but initially it's not all the rules, and each scenario you add a few more rules into it and make things ease people into that?
Yeah, I know that.
Well, I mean, WizKids does have a starting set type of a deal with, for example, their...
The Mercenary set with the Wolf Dragoons and the Kellhounds, I think it was? That one?
No. I'm referring to the Batman Alpha and the Alpha HeroClix sets that they come out with. Those are attempts for them to start doing something like that, where, okay, we're going to make this set. It's going to be very simplistic rules. It's going to have its own rules, but it's designed as a step towards the regular HeroClix. But I think the thing where they fail with that strategy, and last I remember...
That's my opinion.
The last thing I remember reading about that attempt, though, is that the thing is that after you get those alpha figures or whatever, I believe they're not a tournament legal in a regular HeroClix match. So once you get those, learn how to play, you got to go out and buy a whole different set. And I don't agree with that. I mean, if you're going to make an introductory set, for example, the way they should do it is a lot like how if you buy the current edition of the classic Battletech, mm-hmm. it comes with two rule books. It comes with the regular standard rule book, and it comes with the introductory rule book. Mm-hmm. You take the introductory rule book, and it'll give you basically all the rules except for, I think it's heat and then and maybe multiple shots. I don't remember exactly. But the idea is that you play with that, and the things that you're playing with you'll use in a regular game. So once you're ready to move up to the regular game, all the rules, everything you've learned, everything you use is usable in that game. Yeah. Now, if WizKids do something like this for their Mech Warrior, I'm not against it as long as they make sure it's compatible with whatever the standard game is. It's got to be able to say, okay, I just spent $5 or $10 or $15 for this introductory thing. Now that I'm ready to learn to play the real game, I don't want to have to go out and replace this $15 that I spent to play. I want to be able to go, okay, now I'm into the game. I've already got $15 invested into this game. Because that's what a lot of people intend to do. You know, it's those people that are thinking that they're getting that, then they get it, and then realize, oh, I can't do this, and that they can't use them. And then they get stuck having to, buy more stuff.
Right. I like how, that what you're saying is kind of like how Games Workshop does it with the Warhammer. They have certain sets that are like, the only one that's coming to mind right now is the Battle for McCrag. It's Space Marines versus Orcs?
That was the fourth edition starter set. That was Space Marines versus Tyranids.
My apologies.
So the fifth edition is Space Marines versus Orcs.
That's right. Okay.
Assault of Black Reach.
All right, Assault of Black Reach in this case now. It's, everything is completely legal. You have, like, it's a starter set. You have a bunch of Marines and a bunch of Orcs. And they're all legal. You can use them all the way up until all the way up until whenever you want to stop playing, if you ever want to stop playing. Hopefully you don't. but yeah, that's, and then they've got a rule book in there, like a small rule book. It's all the rules in there. It's just none of the fluff. It's, kind of like a pocket rule book.
Yeah, it's a lot smaller than this gigantic tome we have in front of us here.
Yes.
I don't think I have a small one laying around at the moment unless
I never
it
did.
So. Inside my Apocalypse backpack I got right here. But like one thing Dave, have you ever played the Batman ActionClix game?
I'm sorry?
Did you ever play that Batman ActionClix game that when WizKids like dropped earlier this summer?
No, I quit playing HeroClix when they canceled all of their older stuff from when they did the set retirement.
Oh, yeah, that tends to tick players off in a hurry. That's why I haven't bought much MechWarrior stuff in, like, 2 years, because, like, screw you with kids. But, for example, here, what Graham was just saying, really, obviously you can't see it, Dave, but I'm holding up the current 5th edition rulebook, the gigantic thing, and then next to me is the old 4th edition mini rulebook, and it's
Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, it's literally about, about half the size,
about half,
and, like,
half
a
the
tenth
air.
The thickness.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like, I'll just put some pictures of the video for you. But yeah, there's like huge differences. That's
absolutely
what he's kind of talking about.
Pretty much. A Battle for Black Reach. Assault of Black Reach. I haven't actually taken a good look at it, but yeah, it's, like I said, everything in there is usable. You can use the Space Marines that are in there. You can use the Orcs in there. Chances are you're going to want to build up your forces. You don't really so much as just replace the stuff you got, it's just add to it. And you just get more and more stuff. I mean, I've been playing Warhammer 40K since I was a junior in high school, so that was about 5 years ago. And I've very few things that I bought I don't use. There's a couple of them, but that's personal preference more than actual rules change. Mm-hmm.
There's like two things that, concerns that would come up with me with the new starter set kind of thing. Like, well, one with the Batman HeroClix, not Batman ActionClix. It's Batman HeroClix game. The rules were so simple that the game was really just stupid. So, I mean, you should have, tiers. I like the idea of having tiers of rule sets. But if the basic rule set is just so lame that, you know, it gives you a terrible gaming experience, you're not going to stick around and play.
It's like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and another example of good crossovers, which a lot of people sometimes forget about, is HeroScape. If you get HeroScape, when I first bought HeroScape and played with my kids, when we a few years ago, they were a lot younger. They didn't understand, you know, all the rules and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we flipped the cards over, and there was a beginner level.
Yeah.
And there's not any special abilities. It's just, but the game mechanic is the same. So once they learn that mechanic and they get older, like now they play. Now when we play as a family, we use the advanced rules, and we've even made up a couple of our heroes too, just for the fun of it. But right. The idea is that it's the same and can be used. I mean, we could even do it. You could even take someone playing, one person playing the beginner set and the rest of us playing the advanced set, and it'd still be an enjoyable game. It still would mesh well. So that's the kind of thing. That's the thing where I think WizKids dropped with that whole Batman thing. It should have been, if they were going to call it Action Clicks, they should have it compatible with Halo Action Clicks, because that's what the idea was, first of all. And
it's
it should
not
be compatible
with it, by the way, if you're curious.
Right, because, like, I think it was the alien. I think, if I remember correctly, the Aliens sets that they released were Action and Horror Clicks. I believe they were Action and Horror Clicks. They had rules to be able to play them with either set. So you could play them in Horror Clicks, or you could play them in the Action Clicks with the Halo. If I remember correctly, I believe that's what it was. And they should have done that same thing with the Batman thing. They should have made a Hero and Action Clicks and have it compatible with both. But, you know, they didn't do it. I think they dropped the ball with that.
It's kind of funny you mentioned HeroScape, because actually just a few minutes ago I got up and walked off camera for a minute to actually get my box of Utgard figures here. So I'm actually sitting in front of me right now from all my HeroScape stuff. But also the other thing along those lines of, like, talking about getting starter sets is, I've been some games, like, for example, did you ever play Confrontation by Rackham? It's like their kind of competitor to Warhammer Fantasy, War Machine-ish. It just came out earlier this year. No?
No, it came out earlier than that.
Oh, sorry, it was late last year, I think. Well, the fourth edition.
Okay, all right.
The game's like 6 years old, but they re-released it like last year.
Okay.
At the end of last year. But, like, in that case, the starter set was so small in terms of figures they gave you. It may be an awesome game to play in a large-scale battle, but the starter set they gave you was such a bad experience. Not because the rules were necessarily bad, even though they're confusing as heck in some parts, but they were like, you had so few figures you couldn't have an enjoyable experience. And, like, I'm not going to spend any more money on this game. So that's the other thing that can easily happen to you. If, like, with some of the Confrontation was a big one. What was the other one that ticked me off about that? I don't remember. I'll think about it top of my head. But
I'm a little more limited in my gaming experience. Yeah. I'm more specialized, so I've never really played a whole lot of. I played War Machine a couple times. I thought it was okay. It didn't seem quite as epic as 40K.
It's a much smaller scale game, but it's got a.
I can see where people would enjoy it. I mean, I have nothing against the game. I just like the epicness of 40K.
Because speaking of War Machine, one thing I said it did really well was the starter sets. The fact that you bought those $50 box sets, you got a Warcaster and a few Warjacks, you got an amazing gaming experience out of that. It wasn't a lot of figures, but the way the game, you know, is played is not meant to be played with a lot of figures. And it worked really well. So, I mean, I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that, Dave? Is there anything you want
to... To have a lot of figures. Well, I mean,
that's the case.
Well, I could see both some pros and cons for having really big starter sets. Because first of all, you want, if you do have a starter set, you want it to be affordable.
Yeah.
And you want it to be targeting aspects of the game. An example of this would be how Magic, and I hate to bring up Magic in a discussion with Wargames, but there's one.
I play Magic, so.
Well, the one thing about
more accurately.
One thing about Magic that I do like that they do is that and they switched over for a while there from having starter sets to having pre-constructed decks. And with each pre-constructed deck, they would have a little intro to the game, as well as how to play the game with the colors of the deck, and they had the deck labeled with the color of what it was. And it would be really a good idea for any starter set to have the same type of a deal. So let's say, for example, if we're doing a 40K starter set and someone wants to buy a starter set, it should be a small force of whatever might be the minimum to play the game. I don't know, you know, points wise, but each one should be a different faction, and each set should come with a little how to play the orcs, how to play the dwarves, or whatever. And the same thing, I think it would be really good for MechWarrior if they do re-release MechWarrior and come out with new starters. They really should do them, each one into a faction. Now, whether or not it be random faction, you know, because it's collectible, you still want some randomness in it. Yeah. But you want to be able to say, you want people to get this from a MechWarrior perspective and say, okay, so you hate playing Bants and Raiders. Well, guess what? You just got a Bants and Raiders. But in the little...
But I love playing Bants and Raiders.
In the information that you get, there's a few tricks and whatnot that it's listed that maybe you didn't know about Bantons. Maybe you didn't know that they could repair. They don't have any repair markers, so you can always fix them up. And then here's a little Battleforce set that's pre-designed with that faction ability already designed into the gimmick, so you can learn how to use it. Now you can play it, learn how to use it, fall in love with it, or play it and then just trade everything away. But the idea is that they get the abilities and the factions out there, rather than having a starter set that includes a little bit of everything, and then you don't really get to, you don't understand the benefits of each different faction that you would doing it other ways. And then, you know, there might be people that would like playing this faction, but they just never did because they never seen it. And then you get people that they finally play against someone who really likes it, and then they go, wow, I wish I'd have known that they could do that, or that, you know, there's so many different options you can do with that faction. Otherwise, I would have been keeping all those instead of trading them away. I mean, I remember that sort of thing in every game that I can think of I've played, whether it be card games or miniature games, where there'd be like something I'm like, oh, man, I never thought of doing that. I shouldn't have traded that away. And I think doing the starter sets like that would be very beneficial to educate the different players in the game on the different ways that it could be played. And once again, that all comes back from an example that was I first seen in Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, just so people know, but the 40K and both 40K and Fantasy Games Workshop does sell like box sets where you save about 20 or 30% if you buy like a $90. It's still pretty expensive. But each faction does have its own little box set that gives you a minimum force to play with. But
yeah, it's a little more than a minimum force, but yeah.
It's a little bit more, but it's still pretty small in terms of what you normally play with in 40K. But it'll give you about a patrol level army, which is basically the smallest you really play with.
Right. And it gives you maybe 600 points when your normal game might be somewhere around 1500 points. The smallest games I really ever play is 500 point patrol missions. And the largest game I've ever played was a 3000 point monstrosity.
Only 3,000 points? I played 20,000, I think, once. Right. That was disgusting with five titans.
Oh, they weren't all your own models.
They're all on the opposing side. That was disgusting. But out of curiosity, Dave, have you been following the new Monster Apocalypse game for Privateer Press at all?
I've been reading up on it. I've talked to a couple of friends that have played it. I went to the website and read it. And I tell you what, I haven't played it yet. I haven't downloaded any rules.
It's not out yet.
But just reading the description, I think it's going to be a really awesome game.
Because one of the interesting things they're doing that they actually just announced in like their press release last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago, in addition to all, you know, the pieces and all the starter sets and crap they're going to normally sell, they're going to have a booklet, kind of like what you're describing there, that actually is a strategy guide for all the factions you can buy. So you buy the booklet and read, like, you know, how the Martians play out, how did the Planet Eaters play out, how do the Guard people play out. So it's actually kind of neat. So I think it's one of the first games I've really seen them do that, where they give a nice, assume, I haven't seen the book yet, but assuming it gives you a nice overview of, you know, really playing all the factions. That's exactly what you're talking about, Dave. It's kind of neat, but
yeah.
For me, it's still a collectible miniatures game, so that's kind of a downer, but we're still picking up for the show to review, so.
That's cool.
One thought also, have you been following the World of Warcraft collectible miniatures game? Because they're doing something interesting too.
Yes, I like the everything I've read about it. It's just our area. The card game started off really good and then it went downhill, But from what I understand, I mean, I have a bunch of decks myself, so I know the game is fun. And when I do find someone that will play, I play anytime. It's just that the people are moving on in this area. Now, I've heard that other areas it's picked up and it's still some places as good as Magic. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But from my experience, I really hope that this game takes off and stays off, because it's something. Not only is it a collective literature game, and the pieces are very look really well, and it's a really fun. I downloaded the demo and I actually played it, because they're unlike all the other miniature downloads. They actually have a miniature cutout of the figures, and you can kind of play a one-on-one game. So I played it before and I really liked it. It's really simple. I like the fact that you don't need a mass ton of army to play. Whatever you have to play is all you need. You can go as little as one to three figures or something.
Yeah.
An average is you're going to be like three or four figures, because you respawn every time you kill something. And it's pretty fast paced too. So I really like what I'm reading about it and what I've played with it. I'm just hoping that it doesn't die out like the card game, because really this game, I mean, these games are targeted to this MMORPG fan base. The problem is that all these people that are buying this stuff are too busy at home on the computer playing the computer game to get out and like play some tournaments or set up some events or anything like that. So, you know, I mean, it's cool. I like it and all, but, whether it, you know, it survives or not, we'll just have to wait and see. But I do plan on getting at least a few of them, because and you know, playing a little bit. And if it takes off, I'll get more. You know, I'll be invested if it takes off. And if not, you know, I'll just have some really cool figures.
It's one of the interesting things I read about the game is that even though it's a collectible miniatures game, the boosters are faction pure. So you don't know what faction you're getting in the booster, but all the three figures or whatever they're going to be in there are the same factions. So that's really kind of a neat step towards making the game more accessible to players, because then you can either, okay, well, maybe you know this faction, you can trade, you know, this booster for someone else's that did get your, if you're, let's say, the Horde, the Alliance player, or whatever. But
yeah,
another interesting thought, it kind of goes back to where we started with the whole movie tie-in. In fact, World of Warcraft is a huge and successful game, like, what, 10 million registered players right now or something? I wonder if Blizzard is running advertisements somehow, like, when they log into the game. I don't play World of Warcraft, but if they log in the game, are they advertising this game, the actual players of the unit of the actual computer game? Because that'd be really interesting to see if the players, enough players do like try this game out to keep it going. That would be a perfect example of big media.
They do have they don't have the actual ads, but they do have like an email sign up sheet for everyone, and it will send you everyone that's involved an email ad at some point, unless you opted not to receive those.
Okay.
That's another thing I should point out is that and one of the things that they do that might actually be one of the reasons that's killing this game is getting these players to computer games players to buy the stuff but not play with it, is that they're including, and I believe I read that they're doing it with the miniatures game too, but in the card game they include special cards that they call loot cards, and they each have a code on the card. If you go into the MMORPG game, you can type in that code and it gives you extra benefits. So a lot of people are collecting these cards, taking those things out, and then just either setting the cards aside, maybe selling them away. They're not actually playing the game. They're just using it to beef up their whole computer game experience. And I believe reading that they were going to do that as well with the miniature game.
I'm surprised they don't go the other way, you know, do a little mailway thing like WizKids has done with some stuff where if you're the player of a game, maybe you send in your $5 or, you know, $1 or something to get a figure to try the game out, you know. Give some kind of discount to the active World of Warcraft players to actually incent them to try and try the game. You know, give them maybe, you know, like, you know, 25% off a starter set,
like,
or something
a
if you have an active
coupon
account.
Or something.
Yeah. So that'd be interesting. Why don't they go the other direction instead of instead of hooking more people on the computer game, go the opposite direction, giving them to play the miniatures game. But I don't know. But one last, I guess, kind of running out of time here. We've got maybe another 5-6 minutes. But one last interesting topic is, how about this distribution of these games? The reality is, if they end up in a game store, that's really nice. You know, gives a nice core audience. Definitely, I love the fact that it helps, you know, local game stores and bringing people, gets people together to play games. But if the game's really sold in local game stores, they're really not going to hit a mass market thing. That's where Heroescape comes in. For a long time, up until recently, you could actually walk into your local Target, Walmart, Toys R Us, and buy these games. I wonder how would a really company, obviously 40K probably would never, you'd never see 40K sitting on a shelf at Toys R Us.
No, probably not. But it's just too complicated a game for a younger audience most of the time.
But I wonder if, you know, like, could WizKids release a much more stripped down version of MechWarrior? So it's like, you know, like, it's basically like, quote, level one rule set we kind of talked about earlier, how you have the basic rule sets in advance, and get that to be sold in stores. So isn't like HeroClix sometimes sold in like the big box stores and too? Do you know, Dave?
I'm sorry?
Do you know, is like HeroClix sometimes sold in the big box stores as well? Like, and you can go like, Borders and Barnes & Noble sometimes, but.
Yeah, I've seen HeroClix all over the place, Targets and Myers and any, you know, a lot of stores. And the same thing with, you know, Halo Action Clix.
For a while.
All the ones.
I saw
the ones that. The ones that they are intending to, that they somehow think are going to be bigger profits because of the fact that they are tied into something. And, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, last I knew, Halo wasn't doing too well anymore, the Action Clix. And WizKids put a lot of stuff, you know, put a lot of advertisement into that. And they do for HeroClix too. But the thing with HeroClix is that the people that play and like the HeroClix are usually the the comic book collectors and the comic book, you know, savvy people. And so a lot of the comic book stores will sell the HeroClix. So, you know, that's why usually you go to like Target and something like that, you'll see, you know, HeroClix, but you won't see a lot of people buying them because people are buying them at the, you know, the comic book stores. Unless someone just happens to be in there and be like, oh yeah, you know, this saves me a trip to the comic book store or something like that. But Action Clix, you know, this scares me with the idea of releasing MechWarrior with a media tie-in, because they put, I believe they put too much effort into marketing and advertising this game, and then they ended up letting it go. So what's to say that if they do finally get a tie-in for MechWarrior, especially if it's not a movie, if it's a video game, which more than likely it's going to be the, you know, Wiseman's MMORPG that is being worked on. But, you know, it's not a good sign if that's what's going to happen, that, you know, because if they do the same thing they did for Action Clix, then MechWarrior is doomed. You know, so it's got to be a good game. It's got to be, you know, if they do decide to redo it and go in a different direction than the Clix, it's got to be easily playable. And if it's not, you know, it's going to go downhill.
Because, like, actually, WizKids has already tried the video game tie-in when they released the Mech Assault game on the DS. Was it called Ghost War, I think? You actually could go to, there's actually a MechWarrior Dark Age, a MechWarrior Age of Destruction Ghost War pack, you know, that had, like, six mechs in it, had all those pilot cards, equipment cards, and a map, and that kind of didn't help at all, but I don't know if the game didn't sell very well in the DS or something, but.
Well, what that was actually, it was a mail-in, excuse me, and the fact is that, you know, a lot of people that got the game didn't do the mail-in because they didn't know much about the Clix game at all. They should have done is they should have included a one figure with the game, and then so people can actually see it and be like, wow, what is this? Because a lot of people, you know, they open up their video games, they take all the junk paper out and throw it right away. And so there's probably a lot of people didn't even know that set existed until, you know, afterwards, and they finally released what was left over of those, you know, to the regular stores for purchase and whatnot.
Oh, is that what happened? So, okay, because I saw it in the store. So after a few months, they released it to the stores as a normal general merchandise. Okay.
Yeah, no, it was originally a mail-in event where you get a coupon with the game or some kind of it was like a little advertisement sliver in the actual game box. But if you open your game box up and if you're like really anticipated and you open it up, it's going to fall on the floor and you're not even going to see it. And if whatever it doesn't, you know, you people rip off the games, then, you know, they would take those and throw them away usually anyways. But the box, it should, like I said, it should have came with a small figure,
And then maybe with that figure packaged inside that figure, have that same coupon to get the rest of the figures. That would have been a perfect thing. I believe now MechWarrior Dark Age, one of the older sets, had a figure that you could mail away to get a Mech Assault figure, and that Mech Assault figure came packaged the same exact way. It had the little advertisement for the game inside of it, but yeah. It was reversed. It was you had to send in the game, and then you got the figure. Then the figure basically had advertisement on, okay, this is a good figure. Now learn how to play with at this website and then purchase stuff at here. Now, that was a good tactic. I mean, a lot of people got that figure, but, you know, to go the you know, that figure, that if I remember correctly, I believe that coupon for that figure was printed on the actual instruction booklet. And so people couldn't throw it away. They found it eventually. Whereas in the DS, I tried to get two of those because it's, you can play multiplayer. And, I remember when I opened up my son's, the coupon fell right out and I didn't even see it. He found it like the next day on the floor where I opened it, you know. And so, you know, that's the, where they missed the mark with that one. I mean, it could, if they would have done different, I think it would have been a little different experience for them.
All right. Well, I hate to cut you off, Dave, but we're running out of time here. So we got to wrap the show up. Any last little thoughts you got about anything?
MechSiege.com coming soon.
Sounds good. Last little thing I just want to say, obviously, by the time the show comes out, the week after will be the release of Monster Apocalypse on October 10th, Privateer Press's new collectible miniatures game. So, obviously, the next episode, the plan is to do a full review of that. Hopefully, we get everything in time, so you guys can check that out, the full review of Monster Apocalypse. We'll be doing our whole Haterade, So Sweet, Crazy Style stuff we always do. And with that, I want to thank Dave for coming on. It's a great talking to you. You had a lot of good information. So, I'll welcome you back in the future if you want to come back on. So with that, you want to just sign off here? So, Graham?
I'm just going to sign off. My name is Graham, as I said before, and that's about all there is that I got to say.
Dave?
Peace out.
All right, once again, I'm Jason. Thanks for watching. Questions, comments, send them over to jason@rocklessoftware.com. And, of course, I got my Twitter account, twitter.com/TT_battlefield. Do you have a Twitter, Dave? Use that a lot?
Yeah, I don't use it as much as I'd like to, but they came out with a couple additions for like Twirl and some other things that I'm really liking. Yeah. So I plan on using it more often.
Do you want to give that out or not? Your call.
I believe you have it listed on your site, interested can go there and find it.
Okay. All right, well, that's it. So, guys, thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks in the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007-2008 Rocko Software, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.podtapeaudio.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.